coming up.
I have a theory. You know when you have like morning erections, right? Those things, they get like restricted by your underwear. So what if as you grow up, you had no underwear and there was no restriction? Your morning erections could be free and standing tall.
Then
it can grow the way it's supposed to grow. What if those who wore underwears actually
have restricted their...
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Today, we're going to be reacting to a whole lot of videos. One of them is 10 benefits of sleeping naked. Do you sleep naked? If you do, let us know in the comments below. All right, no special guests, no frills. Let's get straight into it. We've obviously got our resident urologist here, Dr. Vishen Naidu, and he's going to tell us a very interesting case that we were chatting about off camera. Vish?
You want to pull
without introduction?
Well, we'll pull the image up after.
Okay. I mean, I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on what you thought it was.
Oh, so that picture, you're like, if you never told me, I would have been like, that looks like, it looks like.
Next, do you have a picture?
Yes, it's on the group.
Okay.
It looks kind of like, it looked like some type of bowel. What do you think, Ntlantla? What does that look
like? I don't know. It looks like a, yeah, something in the abdomen. So, I don't know. It's like an abnormal mass.
Mass? What did you think?
Kidney. Cystic kidney.
Like a cyst or something.
Okay. No, so actually, we actually just got consulted for a patient. It was a workup for a differential of sexual disorder.
Okay.
What this means is, like in layman's terms, the patient is an intersex, or chromosomally, they may display phenotypically other or different features. Chromosomally, they may either be 46XX, which is female, or 46XY, which is male, but may display phenotypically and
externally
features of the opposite sex, or maybe certain features might be a mix of both.
Yeah.
And then the same with the external genitalia. So there's multiple different syndromes and classifications can go into. But essentially, the person was, you know, they're an adult. They, you know, they've identified as a male their whole life. They've been seeing a psychologist, and you know, they wondered, like, they had gynecomastia, which is development of breast tissue. So they came to the hospital, you know, wondering why that is.
And just sorry to interrupt, but the relevance of the psychologist, what was talking to the psychologist about?
So this was obviously now once the workup had started. So essentially, generally, if a patient is being worked up as a DSD, what we call it.
What does it stand for?
A differential of sexual disorder.
Okay.
Or disorder of sexual differentiation. But essentially... And I've seen it in kids. Some kids, you know, like they can be 3, 4, 5 years old, and we've diagnosed them as a DSD or intersex, and that person or the child hasn't decided, like they can't decide whether they want to grow up or be raised as a boy or as a girl. You know, a lot of the times the mom might say, or parents might say, no, like, we've given the person a male name or a female name, and they've been raised as a female their whole life, or the opposite way, you know. So essentially, it's more like counseling for the patient that, you know, okay, this is what your chromosomal analysis shows, and phenotypically they may display other signs, more maybe of a male patient, but essentially it's you know, if they undergo certain surgery to make them more of what they want to be, that they are like consenting for it, they know what it means. Because some people, you know, they may have not known. If you now tell them, actually, you have ovaries and a uterus and you actually have the chromosomes of a female, but you've been raised as Mark your whole life, you know? You know, they might take a step back and say, oh, well, actually, now that's what you telling me means maybe I actually need to, I should be a female. So you can't naturally just say, we're going to keep you as Mark. Like, the patient has to decide for themselves. I'm just using a name, Mark. It's not the patient's name, but... Because again, like, if you're going to do a certain surgery for the patient to make them more of a certain sex, they need to understand what it means, what it entails, what the hormonal profile will be after the operation. They will need to be on hormonal replacement therapy afterwards. Things like that. And then obviously once that's done, you know, the person now, you know, can't turn around and be like, oh no, but I actually wanted to be now a female.
Can I just to cut you, just to go back a little bit, right? You're speaking a lot of urology and a lot of doctor language, and you know, our viewers are not doctors. So essentially what you're saying is that you have someone who's born a male, but when you look at their genetic makeup, they are female.
So it could be both ways.
Or both ways.
Yeah.
Is it possible for them to be both? So like, do you ever find like a sort of mosaic, a mixture of where it's unclear, it's something?
I don't know if that makes sense, genetically, not how they look. So genetically, so for example, for male, obviously, so it's 46XY, female is 46XX, but you may have, when you do the analysis, you may have certain translocation of your Y chromosome, or translocation of your SRY region, which is your sex-determining region on the Y chromosome. So you may have like certain expression of certain things, but a certain lack of expression of certain phenotype per se.
Okay. So let's say, just for the guests. So let's say I'm born a male, and then I then at a later stage discover that I have ovaries or uterus. So this is now, I also have a penis, or it's someone who's completely.
So again, with different syndromes and different genetic profile, you may display different external genitalia. So again, like, I've seen where, for example, the like labial folds essentially fuse to become a scrotum, whereas in certain cases where it may halt from fusing. So it's like they slightly enlarge labia, but it's not really yet a scrotum, and it's not completely labia. So that's very like in the middle, you know, and you don't have elongation of the penis, which in like embryology comes from the, pretty much you don't have elongation of the penis, which pretty much would allow, well, it would stay as a clitoris or like an enlarged clitoris per se.
Oh, okay. So in this case, let's cut to the chase here. So you found that he had an internal...
So we call it a gonad. So gonad refers to either testicle or ovary. So the patient had an undescended ovotestes is what we call it, or gonad per se. So it's part testicle, part ovary.
Sure.
And outside, what did they
have? So that's what we were looking at.
Yes.
An ovotesty.
Undescended ovotesty. And what genitalia did they have?
Externally?
Externally, he had a scrotum, which was completely fused, so it wasn't buffered like a Or so like just it wasn't around. It was around, yeah.
Yeah. Scrotum. So, you know, normally you have the separation in the center. Mm. This was just one.
Yeah. And then he had a penis.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like you may not have a patient with a fully developed penis or because essentially they haven't been exposed to the correct level of androgens or hormones while they were in utero.
100%, yeah.
So you don't have full development of the external genitalia. And on the right side, he had an atrophied testicle.
Mm. Ah.
Yeah. So he was essentially, he was producing obviously low amount of testosterone, but he was also producing amounts of estrogen which would be comparable to a female.
Mm. Sure, yeah. That's interesting stuff that we should see. Yeah?
Hectic, man. So, okay, so you removed it.
Yeah, we did remove it.
And now what's the next steps for
this you? This was fairly recently. So, I mean, we're still waiting for... we're still waiting, obviously, from the lab in terms of the histology.
Yeah, to see could it have been cancerous? Because I do believe it's there's a high rate of
cancer. So any undescended testicle can be cancerous. It's exposed to high temperatures, which are not normal for it. So you can have change in the testicle, which can become cancerous.
Mm. I see.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So next steps, I mean, essentially, the patient wants to identify as a male.
And the gynecomastia?
Yes, so you'd have
a hormonal therapy or?
Mammoplasty.
Okay, so he's going to do a
mammoplasty. And
so that's like a breast reduction.
Yes. And then he'll be supplemented with hormone replacement therapy.
So TRT, which is what we offer at the Gents Clinic, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
He's going to be on testosterone replacement therapy, which is necessary in his case and can be necessary as you age as a man. So let us know if you need help.
It's also interesting that he's an old patient. Like a lot of people are getting only finding out that they have undescended testes when they're very old. Something that you can find out as like a young person, as a small child.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's crazy that he's almost 50 years old and only now.
Yeah,
it's being discovered.
But it's also, I mean, you know, especially with sexual issues, it's, you know, it's not something you just pitch, you know, and tell people. I'm sure he noticed that his testicles just didn't seem right, you know, maybe his shaft was not whatever well developed. I don't know, but or maybe he could have consulted and someone said this is normal. You're just different, which is highly likely as well. I mean, how often do we see?
Suppose it's a taboo one, and then also not easy to detect.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen it.
But if you go,
I think also if you're not aware of the conditions, then you're naturally not going to diagnose it.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah,
but one testicle is obviously not normal.
Mm.
So everyone should go and feel their testicles, feel their balls,
especially kids, especially parents. You know, feeling their female kids. And I mean, if there's one, you know, consult someone, get help.
100%.
Mm.
Definitely.
All right, let's get to the videos.
Yeah, let's get down to the videos. That was our interesting case. Obviously, if you have any comments or thoughts on this matter, or maybe you're someone who thinks that they may have an issue, let us know in the comments. Visit our website. We're happy to help always. Let's check out the videos.
You should sleep naked. Sleeping naked feels good. Laying in bed, butt ass naked, feels good. You feel light and free, and there are several other benefits to sleeping naked that I'm going to talk about in this video. So here we go. Reason number one, sleeping naked frees your waist of restriction. So when you sleep with shorts on or underwear or pajama bottoms, you're actually slightly restricting blood flow to your lower body throughout the whole night. Now, maybe this doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal because the blood flow restriction is very, very small, but think about how much time you spend sleeping. You're laying there for hopefully around 7 to 8 hours while your blood is pumping throughout your whole body. And the question is, do you want your blood to pump as well as it can? Or do you want it to pump slightly below as well as it can? And if you're not a total moron, you obviously want it to flow as best as it can.
So I have one question for that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, how tight are people's pants? And
okay, I mean, firstly. Okay, you go first.
No, you go first.
Okay, so again, like, you know, as doctors, in anatomy, the first thing you always had to know was blood supply, innervation, venous drainage, lymphatic drainage. So pretty much to your testicles, what is the blood supply?
Hey.
Isn't it from
the internal iliac?
So
what I'm saying is
whether you're wearing underwear or boxers, it's not compressing abdominally.
Yes, exactly. That's why I said. Yeah. I mean, how tight are people's pants? I mean, for it to even constrict that much. But I think there is a point he's trying to make. And if I were to defend what I would, I would add to the point that he's making. I mean, wearing clothes, especially like really, really warm pajamas, you know that the scrotum is outside your body for a certain reason. It needs to maintain a certain temperature. So you can argue the fact that if I'm wearing really warm clothes.
Okay, but what would be the optimal temperature? Because you don't want to have ice cold feet.
I suppose the other thing could be like.
What would you say the optimal temperature for your testes should be, Vish?
Is it not just 36?
No, so it's your body temperature minus, I think it's like 2 degrees. Yeah.
Oh, so slightly lower than
colder in your body. Yeah.
Yeah, because if it was optimal to have it at 36, then your testes would be inside your body.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's why it's outside. But now that's my thing. Like now it's winter and you've got an electric blanket. So now what must happen? Because now either I'm not getting any blood flow to my feet.
Oh,
I'm getting, you know.
But just put an ice pack on your balls.
Just put an ice pack on my nuts. And
so imagine wearing pajamas, using a blanket? What do you call it?
Yeah,
heating blanket or whatever.
Electric blanket.
I mean, obviously that is going to your boy literally incinerating, burning your balls.
So the other thing is also, I suppose, like prolonged exposure. You know, but I mean. Again, it's like you could say technically your spermatic cord or what connects your testicle into the scrotum, obviously your blood supply, and it's pretty much in the inguinal canal.
Yeah, so in your groin.
So, I mean, like no one actually wears their underwear or their pants like
on the groin. Just above the shaft.
You know, and it's like tight.
So that's definitely a myth. Whatever you're saying,
so that's an absolute rubbish.
And the temperature? Sure.
If you're wearing, I suppose, like really constrictive underwear and it's like compressing your testicles into your body or like maintaining that heat.
Like, and this must be like, you know, those thermal tights, but who wears them to sleep now?
Yeah.
We know Nklantla wears them to the gym.
What?
The strange thing is
those thermal tights, those aren't good for your nuts, man.
I don't wear that stuff.
You know, patients.
Yes, those ones that like fit your leg, like.
But they don't squeeze your crotch.
Well, they open at the top. Yeah.
But then patients who have hernias, like they're obviously encouraged to wear tight underwear.
If you've got an inguinal hernia or something like that. But for the general public, we have the list of the 10 benefits, right? You've got that list on your iPad. I read in this article, some make somewhat sense. Like, you know, if you sleep with no pants, then you'll likely be in your testicles are going to be in a much cooler environment.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. But I don't think that the temperature is like that much different from wearing boxers versus.
Exactly.
You're sleeping with the duvet or no duvet.
Yeah. Like now, but then you're going to freeze. So now, I think the temperature thing is a bit negligible. I really don't think, unless you're sleeping with an electric blanket and it's on your nuts.
Yeah.
And it's literally boiling your nuts.
I think another important thing they cover in the article is how in order for you to get into like deep sleep, your core body temperature needs to drop. Mm. So you know, being naked will obviously assist you to reach that temperature.
Okay, but we're in winter now. And it's cold now.
No. I sleep naked in winter.
What?
Yeah, it's just a habit.
But seriously?
You can. I mean, yes, maybe add another layer.
So you get in the bed, no...
No, you take a shower, you're nice and warm, then you jump into bed.
Straight into bed. But naked. Like, cow.
No, and it's not for these reasons. It's just a habit. What if
you have like an emergency and you have to get out of the bed?
I'm screwed.
No, but when you wake up in the morning, you wake up in the morning, you're now butt naked in winter.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
you
just
grab a gown. I mean, that's why you have gowns. You grab a gown, put on a gown, and do your business.
Yo.
Even if an emergency happened, you'd run for the gown. Then
did you even used to do this in res? Like, would you have to get?
This nonsense.
Yeah.
When you're in res.
But don't forget, this is just like I said, I didn't do this because of all these testicular
health. No, I know. But I'm just wondering, like, how?
It's a habit. Maybe when I was younger, my mom couldn't afford pajamas. Who knows?
Oh, that's a lie. Okay, so you... If we're talking about someone with high levels of testosterone, Tlantla is a perfect example of someone with high levels of testosterone.
Yeah, well, if you were to...
Maybe it's the fact that you... And it's only in winter. In summer, you don't sleep naked.
No. Summer, winter, I sleep naked. It's just...
You're a naked sleeper.
I'm a naked sleeper most of the time. I mean, I do own PJs, but I prefer...
But you prefer to just be butt naked. Yeah.
And a lot of people sleep like that.
Okay. It's not so then maybe we need to ask him what he feels, what you feel different to how I feel when I wake up in the morning. Because when I wake up in the morning, I feel like ice cold.
Mm.
And I'm like, there's no way I'd be able to get up and like, yo, I'm now in it.
Just put a blanket.
Exactly. Not even heated blanket. Even just like a warm blanket. I'm telling you, you'll wake up fine if you're used to it. But one thing I wanted to mention is
now we all have to try this.
I find that I sleep a bit faster, I just get into deep sleep a bit quicker when I sleep like that compared to if I'm in clothes.
Okay, I'm gonna try with just no pants.
Just try it. It really works. It really works.
Maybe no shirt. Let me try with no shirt. Then I'll try no pants.
Yeah. What are some of the other benefits?
It's on the article, but so they say, like, okay, obviously this restriction, like having clothing is restrictive. I don't know how that's supposed to help. The deep sleep thing about having your core body temperature drop, I can understand that to some extent, yeah. I don't know. What else?
Ventilation as well. They speak of ventilation, especially for women.
Not having any underwear. Yeah,
getting, not having underwear, especially at night. I think we covered this with the gynae, even the type of underwear that they need to wear. But I think especially at night where it's a dark, hot environment, yeast loves that. Mm. So obviously for people who are, at high risk of getting these things, so sleeping and, well ventilated would probably be better.
I have a theory. When you have like morning erections, right? Those things, they get like restricted by your underwear. So what if, as you grow up, you had no underwear and there was no restriction? Your morning erections could be free and standing tall.
Then
it can grow the way it's supposed to grow. What if those who wore underwears actually
restricted their length?
Yo.
Yeah, obviously nasty.
You know, like how back in 1500s China, there was this beauty standard where women would bandage their feet to make sure they don't grow because it was a beauty standard to have small feet. I think Nas is trying to give that same example for boxers. But who wears like super tight to go to sleep?
Yeah.
Like you can, if you're going to get an erection, boxers, it'll still stand.
But even boxers will be restrictive.
I suppose to some extent, but not like
not severely. Much. Not to that extent. Anything else? So it's better sleep. Better temperature. For women, ventilation.
Ventilation. Vish, can you think of any other reasons why sleeping naked might be better for you. They also spoke about, you know, having a partner and having that close physical touch can improve your oxytocin, because you actually need body to body, not like clothing. You need actual like body temperature.
Cool. Yeah.
To skin to skin contact for oxytocin, and that improves like bonding in your partner. It improves your mood, can assist with like a deeper sleep as well.
Stress, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, cool. I think
next video. So I heard that after this guy,
is this a man?
That's a man.
Okay.
That's right. Do you want to play the video again? It looks quite quick. We just heard a lot of "Hey, Babu."
Yeah.
Who is commenting? So wait, that was the injury that cost him his leg.
What?
Yeah. Oh, it's a girl.
Where was the amputation? At what level?
It was like below his knee.
Below knee.
A leg is...
below the knee.
Generally below the knee.
I think I know what happened.
What do you think happened?
Probably dislocated his... his tibia, femur.
And then probably had a popliteal artery. Aneurysm or...
Yeah, like a vessel.
I mean, it's unlikely to have severed it.
Yeah,
probably had an aneurysm.
Probably, yeah.
And then that cut off
probably
his blood
caused
supply.
The clot. Yeah.
To the rest of his leg, and he lost his leg. Yo,
they always say, dislocated at your knee joint.
Yeah,
you always have to get the CT angio.
Yeah, to make sure that you don't have.
But
cut off
do we do CT angios like routinely?
Yeah.
Seriously? You've got to check the blood supply to the leg if you have a dislocated knee.
Yeah.
Patella
but only if it's dislocated.
You've had a previous you've had a trauma, knee that got dislocated, sometimes the paramedics or patients, they reduce it
particularly
back.
Like patella dislocations. Yeah.
Not patella. Remember, your popliteals are posteriorly.
So then when you talk about knee dislocations, you're saying tibia.
Femur to tibia, yeah.
Okay. Femur to tibia.
Because your popliteals are posterior.
Yes, posterior. Sorry.
So not patella. Okay. So
especially after reduction, because
you're not sure whether
you've caused like an intimal tear or intimal flap in that vessel. That's the inner layer of
and
the
I'm
blood
sure,
vessel.
And I'm sure that looks like slightly higher BMI, probably poor blood supply already to begin with.
Mm. I'll be dealing with diabetes.
Poor blood supply. Shame.
Well, come on.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you can't tell me that there isn't a correlation. The viscosity of the blood must be increased from the cholesterol.
No, I think it's just trauma-related.
Yeah, this kind of injury is common in athletes.
It's just okay, fine, fair enough. It's just trauma-related.
Rugby players.
Once I was an intern, actually it was a bad, sad case. It was a kid. I think he was about 10 years old. He was playing soccer and had a dislocated knee. Presented,
so tibiofemoral dislocation.
Yeah. Basically it was a delayed presentation and he had lost the limb.
How do you delay presentation with a dislocated?
Because with ischemia comes a lot of pain.
Yeah. You know, sometimes in like rural places.
Yo.
You
know,
There's just delays, you know. You always ask, you know, why not come yesterday when it happened? Or, you know.
Hectic, man. You're that hectic. All right. Moral of the story, don't go to Total Ninja. Nah, I've been. It's quite fine. It's nice.
Is it?
Just try not to dislocate your
knee. Yeah. Yes.
And generally the trauma that occurs to dislocate the knee is often a force that goes from anterior to posterior, because then it'll cause the one bone to slide across the other, pinch that vessel, and that's where the blood supply will get cut off. Anyway, let's move on.
Before versus after 3 years of vaping.
bit of triceps after.
All right. Well, look, a lot of studies have been done on vaping, but a lot have not yet been done.
Yeah.
We are kind of like in that phase when smoking first hit the markets.
When it was legal?
When it was legal. Super, when it was doctors were prescribing. Doctors well, like legal. Like doctors used to smoke. Doctors, they used to have doctors on the pack of...
Doctors smoke Camel.
Doctors smoke Camel. Yeah. There was like a very famous campaign of like, yeah, doctors smoke Camel.
So it's good for your health. And
in fact, funny enough, there's a cardiothoracic surgeon at Joburg Gen who is a chain smoker. I saw him walk into theater with a pack of Camel. Funny enough, Camel cigarettes in his top pocket. He's talking about how he's about to remove this person's lung. He's about to do a lobectomy for someone who's got lung cancer. And I'm there like, you smell of cigarettes. It was the craziest thing for me.
Seen all the complications of...
Old guy. And I was just like, yo. But back in the day, that's what people were taught. They were taught that actually, and to some extent, they weren't lying when they said that smoking is going to increase your lung capacity, but not in a good way. Like that's the thing that they taught them. I was like, yeah, smoking will actually improve your lung capacity. It's like training your lungs. But what we now know is that it causes a condition called COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And it causes air trapping and a lot of like fluid buildup and irritation in the lungs. And that causes you basically to your lungs to expand.
Or collapse, fibrosis,
And now with vaping, it's a bit different. There's a few things that they found, but they haven't found a lot because everybody still thinks that it's perfectly safe.
Yeah.
And there's no issue. The one that
is vaping better than cigarette?
Who knows?
Who knows, eh?
Who knows, man? Who knows? We won't know until they really like do long-term studies and can look at someone who's just like, they'll have to now look at teenagers that have just started vaping.
Yeah.
And look at them over like a 5 to 10 year period and see if any of them have a high incidence of lung cancer versus...
Even longer.
Maybe even longer. Like 20, 30, 40 years. And so if we don't really think of like e-cigarettes or vaping, it's probably only the last, 10 years maybe? More?
No, maybe less than that. Hey?
When people used to screw on their things.
Yeah, you used to have those. You used to have ones where they put on like a little cigarette onto a... into like an electric device that heats it and it gives them more nicotine and less tar. Sure. I think the whole point is they were trying to eliminate like certain harmful chemicals, but then they're adding in other
new chemicals, heavy metals and
we don't know.
And the one thing I've never...
Vape connoisseurs.
Another thing I could never understand is, I mean, how do you say to someone, stop cigarettes, move to vaping, when vaping also has nicotine? Yeah. And all these other added sort of harmful substances.
100%.
And I mean, if you look at vaping, you know, a cigarette, you can, cigarettes run out. You
know?
Vaping doesn't really run out. I mean, if you can charge that thing and put some flavor, you can go on for days.
You're more easy access.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the actual volume of vaping is a lot more smoke technically, right? So theoretically, we can say more smoke, more irritation to the lungs, more potential damage.
And with vape, it's oil.
Yeah, it's oil-based. Yeah.
So you actually get that chemical in your lungs, and you don't know what that can cause.
Yeah.
And so the one thing it does cause...
To say it's harmless, you can't say it's harmless.
Popcorn lung, what Vish mentioned. So do you guys know about popcorn lung?
Yeah, it's like far away. In
I was reading about it just before the episode. Popcorn lung is basically bronchiolitis obliterans. So it basically destroys the alveoli. So the last end bits of your lung is the alveoli. And that's where oxygen diffuses into the blood.
CO2 and it goes into the alveoli when you breathe out, and where oxygen goes into your blood.
Yeah.
So it's where oxygen, gaseous exchange occurs. So oxygen in, CO2 out. And they think that the chemical that's responsible for this is a chemical called diacetyl. And interestingly, they found the correlation between the two because this specific condition was found in factory workers that worked at microwave popcorn factories. Because in microwave popcorn, they also have this chemical called diacetyl. And they were obviously exposed to this diacetyl, especially in earlier years where they didn't have as much PPE. And these patients had a very similar presentation that we are seeing now with people who are vaping with that chemical specifically in. A lot of the vape companies apparently have removed that diacetyl, but it's not like, it's not regulated. It's not a definitive. They can always put it back in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those things that's...
Yeah, so we're going to see new cancers in the future.
That's what I think. Mm. But we'll have to wait and see. Next.
Starting now, your height is going to matter a whole lot more on Tinder. That's because this week, the dating app just quietly tried to test a new feature where users can filter by height. Someone posted a screenshot on Reddit showing a new height toggle in discovery settings, which allows users to specify the height they want for their matches. And you want to know the top comment on that Reddit thread? The only way they're going to get women to pay for their service too. Now, they did put a disclaimer right above this saying that it's not so that women can filter out short men. Because I'm not going to lie, Twitter is having a meltdown right now, saying it's over for short kings. But what is so ironic is that in 2019, they actually posted about a height verification for April Fools. 6 years later, though, we now have a height filter, and it's the 2nd of May, so it's real. But what do you think? Should they keep or remove this new feature?
Yo, what do you guys think?
I really have no thoughts about this. I'm not on Tinder. Been on Tinder. You
probably just put all of your measurements.
Yeah, why not stop? Why stop there? Add your penis. I'm looking for this size penis, this height, this age, this race, this weight.
Vice versa.
Yeah, true. But I mean, the thing is, like, for men, we don't mind. It's like majority of men don't. It's not like we aspire to have a tall woman.
Yeah.
You aspire to have a tall
woman. No, we don't aspire to have like a super tall woman. We generally aspire to have someone that's maybe our height or a little bit shorter.
And I think it comes from, obviously,
be honest.
Height, we tend to associate it with power, strength, you know, dominance. So, I mean, why would you want power, strength as a man?
Would you be comfortable walking dominated down the street?
I remember.
Walking down the street like...
I actually have a... I'm not sure if you guys remember, like, from Riz. Enough of our guy, friends were at some party and some chick, like, picked him up and... like carried him.
Oh wow!
Out of the party.
Yes. You remember this? Yeah. No,
I don't remember this.
So imagine the story the next day.
Yeah, no.
Your girlfriend came and not carried
even,
you back
just
to
not
his.
Even his girlfriend.
Sure.
Like just
dominated
some
you.
Random. He was like met there.
Okay, but let's stick to the topic right now. What do you think this effect will have? So obviously. Men, some men are on there not just to hook up, they're there to genuinely find a partner. Some people have met their partners and fallen in love, etc. on this app. What's going to happen to short men? And what defines short? Like, what's the general height? Sister Bettina, what do you think? What's like the cutoff height for women? Like, a woman just can't see herself with anything less than in meters.
Or centimeters,
whatever.
What's your height? Let's start there. Yeah, so what's your ideal?
What would you say is you're not going lower? What's the cutoff?
Or you can, you would, if you would go lower, you can say.
Oh.
Hey.
What's
your
height?
Me?
Yeah. Bish. What's your height, Bish?
I'm 180.
180?
No,
is not that high?
No, but
Vish.
No, Vish is not 180.
Vish, I know Vish is
180. You're like the same.
You are in the 170s at best.
I remember
and,
what
and
I remember.
I mean, 180 is what? Americans say 6 foot, eh?
No, like 5'11.
Guys, Vish is 175, 176. We measure together in vets.
Yeah.
So that is
okay,
actually
so
average.
175 is like a cutoff.
No, maybe 176. I would believe that because I'm 175.
Okay, so anyway, around that height is where you go. Would you say generally a woman that's
he's
like
not.
Now he's saying
a cutoff, or would they accept lower
that
than
that? That means you're same height as him.
No, he's probably about 176. I would believe that.
Like 1 centimeter difference.
Okay, we're arguing for that. Like, these
okay,
are just,
but the thing is that height is a serious selection tool that women use. And we can't.
It's an evolutionary one.
Yeah, and you can't even say, like, a lot of girls will say, no, I don't, as long as he's taller than me, or no, it's not, height doesn't really matter. But when you see them in the wild, that's what they actually
in the wild.
Yeah,
but again, it can also be like, if you like a wider gent or like a bigger gent, you know, like broadways, you would look shorter even if you were. Like, even if
not
you were taller.
If you like 190, 195 centimeters.
No, but that's saying like you're very tall. I'm saying if you're like borderline, you're like just over 1'7", and you like, you were more wider, you're going to look much shorter than.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
okay. My issue is, I feel like they also just, well, I'm against it. And the reason why is, I feel like, I mean, there's already so many problems people are having as the humanity, especially, you know, in terms of body image and all these things. I mean, if it's I think for women, if it's really that important, that's why you guys chat, right? You match, and then you say, hey, listen,
let's
how tall
go see
are
each
you?
Other.
You
but
know?
You're gonna meet the person anyways.
Because unless, like, the thing is, the dating apps. What is the purpose of the dating apps? Some of them, the people are just there to hook up. Okay, fine. But there are also people that are using it genuinely to find a life partner. But then if you're trying to find a life partner, you must actually go and see the person and realize that all of us are in relationships or have been in serious relationships in our life. You know that looks, they are very important, but they're not the most vital thing in a relationship. You've got to find a person that you can like be compatible with.
Yeah. That's
and there are
true.
A lot of people that you potentially will find attractive, but the connection is not only about that.
But don't you guys also feel like they're putting a spotlight onto something that, as I mean, as a people, I think it's. I mean, yes, there are certain women who will, you know, say, you know what, height is first. Like, I don't care how this person looks. They're just taller than me, it's enough. But, I mean, a lot of people, I personally think it's not. It's not like that. Like, yes, I mean, it's one of the things I would like. But not, I mean, for Tinder to then add it as an addition. I think next thing they're going to be putting BMI there and skin color. And
yeah,
you understand?
I think it's
and
a slippery
the
slope.
The shape of your nose. You understand?
Or like estimated weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I think you put your picture, you say this is what it's about, you what you're about, and you proceed from there. And people must just find what they're looking for.
But it also saves them, like, the embarrassment of meeting and showing your height, you know, because like I'd rather
you're
a human being,
like you were born that you can't change your height.
What if you like?
I know, but you just rather.
Yeah. But like, I mean,
you'd rather just get it out from the beginning.
But yeah, you're gonna meet the person anyways. It's like having like a catfish, or like if you were a catfish, then like an actual catfish. Like if you were like not who you said you were. Like, then you're not going to meet them. But, like, if you genuinely are,
like look,
interested,
if the person is standing on a table taking their profile picture with their friends,
exactly.
With their very tall friends to catfish people, they're going to get caught out at some point.
Yeah.
I get that. But you could also just lie about your height.
Exactly.
Who's to say? Like,
yeah, but then you meet and then.
Yeah, so either way, you're going to meet and you're going to find out. So just go and meet the person, man.
But he's saying that there's also a height verification. You can also literally go on with the app and they can take a picture and it verifies your height against something.
Oh, shucks.
So you can't lie about your height.
Yes, see, okay. Nah, I don't think it's a good idea. Next video.
Here's for different types of headaches. If all the pain is in your forehead, then you most likely need more sleep. If the headache is on top of your head, then you need to eat more food and drink more water. If the headache is at the back of your head, then you're just stressing too much and you need to stop. If the headache's at the front of your face, then that's a sinus headache, and you need medicine or exercise. If it feels like something is tightly wrapped around your head, then that's a tension headache, and you need to get the screen away from your face and go take a hot shower. If all of the pain is around one eye, that's called a cluster headache. And if you get these often, you need to get off of the internet and go see a doctor. And if the side of your head really hurts, that's a migraine, not a headache.
Thoughts?
Yeah.
Most seems pretty pretty reasonable. Yeah. I mean, I don't know so much about like the front of your headache means you need sleep. When you're on call, all of us have to work night shifts, many hours, sometimes don't sleep for an entire night and then a day. Where do you get a headache? Where do you feel it in your head?
I don't generally get headaches.
I get a tension. I'll get a tension.
You don't get a headache at all. You don't feel it in your head.
Like zero, bro. I think my body is just numb now.
Yes, see, you just like go through the
day.
Or
maybe you hydrate and you eat and you know. Yeah. And don't forget, I mean,
wait, Swale, remember these guys are in ophthal and urology, so it's not that like it's not ED, so it's a different.
Maybe that counts.
But no, you work sometimes, occasionally in the emergency.
Yeah, department. But still, I think it's another variant of ophthalmology.
Okay. So in your career, you're saying that you never got headaches deprivation.
I have, but what I'm saying is that it's not something. I mean, I work night shift almost every week, sometimes twice in 1 week. I don't get headaches. Mm. It's like generally I don't get headaches. Maybe
crazy. So what would you say, other than just maybe the nature of the work, what would you say is the most important thing to avoid those if you're like a bit sleep deprived? How do you
avoid getting what I find is obviously rest, pre-call, and eat and hydrate.
Okay. You wish, apart from just the nature of the work, what advice would you give to people? If you have a taxing job, or
I think also just try and like maintain like your normal routine.
As in?
I don't know, I just feel like trying to maintain your normal routine. Like some people, if they're doing calls or things and they eat differently, they drink different like fluids. I don't take energy drinks.
Oh, you don't? Red but Bull, caffeine Monster. And stuff you do.
Yeah, but when I'm at work, I mean, you can't technically at night have any coffee, you know?
Why not? You could take coffee to work?
I don't do that.
Okay, and you still manage fine.
But I think apart from that, I'd still go the following day, train, or even the same day, like just try and keep your, like my normal day. Mm.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's
just
really
try and like normalize, like,
Mm. And it's just it one normal. Abnormal yeah. thing in an yeah. otherwise normal schedule.
Mm.
Yeah, that is an important.
But I mean, I also do calls from home, so.
Yeah, so that helps now. But you've obviously
Why
not.
Why are you guys laughing?
Yeah, no, look, that's all good and well, but there may be times where you still get called out. So
your
sleep gets broken. Yeah. But there were times where you were on site and in the hospital.
So. I mean, I did do gen surge before, and you are at site busy like the entire night. I think just eating, hydrating. I think hydrating is the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think the rest thing is a bit difficult because, I mean, you would know as well, you may not get to rest at all.
Yeah. Mm.
You know?
So resting before could be helpful.
Yeah.
And then obviously you will rest a bit after your
yeah. shift.
I mean, I was always someone who could never sleep like before. But
yeah, I struggle. I can't sleep before.
I force myself. Yeah,
and do you manage to fall asleep before?
Mm. But not always. But I'm saying I do. You know, I'll tell myself
like you just
giving myself 4 hours of just, you know,
yeah, 4 hours.
4 hours of sleep before you do a shift.
Jesus.
Gee whiz. After a full night's sleep, and you go to work in the day.
So sometimes it's not like deep sleep where. You know, wake up feeling like, I'm revitalized. Sometimes just shutting your eyes, being in a quiet room, dark room. That's it. That's
lying down, rest. Yeah. Resting.
I think it's also just like, I don't know, but I to a degree, I think it's also just what you're used to or like what you can like cope with or what you can manage.
Mm.
And if you were used to like having quiet calls and things and then you get thrown into like a really busy, different place.
Mm.
Naturally, you're not going to manage, you know?
Yeah.
That's mainly stress. So you're going to have like a headache from stress, not really from sleep deprivation.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I think for me, like as the years have gone by, I'm finding it more difficult to recover from calls in the sense of like my sleep patterns will become a bit erratic. Like I'll have the night after I do a call, I may sleep earlier than usual and then maybe wake up like randomly very early, like 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. And then now I'm up and I feel like I can't go back to sleep because I've got another day of work to do or whatever. And one of the things that Naseem actually had advised for me to try was melatonin. Mm. And melatonin has helped. Not, I don't take it every night, but if I feel like my sleep's obviously like the day after a call or something, I need to get a good deep night's sleep, then I'll take it. And generally it does help.
Mm. There are a few like things as well. Avoiding white light or blue light before you fall asleep. They do also mention certain like noises or like brown noise, purple noise.
It's brown noise and purple noise.
There's also white and green noise. Yeah, all like different colors of noises.
Yeah. Okay,
to try
so
and
just avoid noise.
No. You can listen to that.
Yeah, no, and then previously I used to suffer with tinnitus quite badly. It's much, much better now because I had sensory neural hearing loss. So I used to listen to white noise whenever I needed. But, you know, as the years have gone by, the tinnitus has gotten much better.
Where do you find white noise?
On YouTube.
You can find it on YouTube. It's just like a fan. You can put a fan on it. That's like white noise. It just masks.
Think of a VTR.
No, I mean, so exercise is one thing.
You're just thinking of a group of white people going, hand, slant, slant.
Let's get down. Let's schlong, get down. Schlong,
schlong. Schlong,
yeah.
Is that what you think white noise is?
Exercise, emptying your bladder before.
Yeah.
Like not having caffeine or tea or diuretic.
Mm.
Like the thing is, you don't think about this stuff when you're young.
Yeah.
And as you get older, Naseem was saying, right? As you get older, your sleep difficult, like to either initiate or to maintain sleep becomes much, much more difficult.
You have less deeper sleep as you get older.
Just naturally, regardless of what career you have.
Yeah. I've noticed the one day I actually did sauna and like you sleep.
Like a baby.
Like, you literally peacefully can get home and just KO.
I should try that.
But physical exercise, I mean, you can exercise, just think about it. Exercise will definitely
Drain you. But, like, even then, I've had days where I've gone, even post-call, and gone to the gym. Maybe I've had a rest in the morning, maybe a small nap or something, and then in the afternoon, gone to the gym, got quite tired, had supper, went to bed relatively early, managed to fall asleep, like tired enough to fall asleep. But the problem was maintaining that sleep.
Mm. But waking up at 3 o'clock is high cortisol. That's what it's stress. You're getting stress headaches.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right.
But let's go back to headaches, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there's some natural things you can do. We went off to sleep, right? There's like having a glass of water with a pinch of salt in it helps with headaches. Even putting your feet in warm water helps with that. Because headache is from a high, like a lot of blood flow to the brain.
So you'd want to increase
what?
Blood flow to the brain.
No, headache is caused by a higher blood flow to the brain. So if you have your feet warm, the blood goes there and then you get.
You saying have like some salt water?
To drink.
That'll increase your BP.
No, it helps with headaches.
A pinch. Well, what is a pinch of salt?
You're going to have a stroke.
No, man.
No. So tell us, explain the pinch of salt.
So, like,
homeopathic stuff?
Legit. Look, just try it and have a headache.
You guys, that's another can of worms, but
But it's even like a rehydration thing.
Next video.
Let's move on to the last video. Wait. Finish your thoughts and then we'll move on to the last video, Naseem.
A frontal headache. There's different types of headaches. Right?
Yeah.
So, say you have like a headache in the front and it's actually really painful all the time. It can't just, not always just a tension headache. It could be a cavernous sinus thrombosis, right?
Oh. Yeah, no, true. Right? Or a thunderclap headache.
But say what's a thunderclap? It's like you mentioned the one at the back of the head, right? So say you feel a sudden back of the head pain, right? And it's like the worst headache ever of your life. You need to go to a hospital.
Yeah. That could be a subarachnoid hemorrhage,
And then it's even like at the top of the head, it could be sagittal sinus thrombosis, right? So all these different kind of things can actually matter.
Yeah. And be intracranial lesions.
Yeah.
Intracranial lesions.
Look, so it's not, basically, in conclusion, this is very simple, simplistic advice. Yeah. Make sure you go see a doctor if you're having chronic headaches.
Yeah.
Try hydration, like general advice. Hydrate, get good enough sleep, rest.
Eat well, you know, exercise, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exercise.
even goes more. Like, if you have like neurological signs, like people will think they're having a headache and say they're having a stroke, right?
Yeah, like a migraine. Yeah.
So
yeah.
A migraine is on one side of the head, but you don't feel pain when you have a stroke usually. Like it's like you can't move your arm and you can't speak and you have like slurred speech, right? So that is a signs of stroke. Mm-hmm. And if you have like headache with neck stiffness and the light feels too bright for you, it could be a brain infection, right? So meningitis, right?
And not just infection, even pressure can cause that.
So high pressure
can cause, especially if they're complaining of visual problems as well.
Yeah.
But it could also be meningitis and all kinds of things.
Okay. All right, last video. Okay, all right. Let's just start off by debunking. This was not appropriate CPR. Okay, for those of you who are interested, they do run a course all across Joburg, in fact, in every city in this country, called Basic Life Support. And they'll teach you some basic principles about CPR. The first thing we see in this video is this guy is clearly alert and awake. That's the first sign. So in normal CPR, you have to find someone who's unconscious, who's basically not responsive. That's the first thing you do. You know, make sure you check if they're responsive, then check if the area around you is safe. For example, you may find somebody in the street, but he's just been robbed, and now you're going to get robbed.
Exactly.
Run. Don't stay and save the guy. So make sure there's no hazards around you. Call for help, right? And make sure this guy is not, definitely not alert at all, okay? The next thing you want to do is check for a pulse. You can feel here on the wrist, on the inside of the wrist. You can feel on the neck here for a carotid pulse. You can feel here on your the groin for a femoral pulse. But the most convenient and easiest one is to feel for a radial pulse here. If you don't feel that pulse, you can rest assured that this guy currently is not having any heart movement or heartbeat that's strong enough to pump blood around his body. And so what they were trying to do there is cardiopulmonary resuscitation, which is chest compressions. The first problem with these chest compressions is not just the fact that the guy is not alert, but he's doing it sitting on a chair, which you're not going to get effective compression because you need a hard or flat surface.
Yeah.
You can't do it on a bed. You can't do it definitely not seated.
You have
to take the person and put them on the floor if they're sitting on a chair. And then on the sternum, on the lower half of the sternum, and that's just here, the lower bit of the rib cage, you can put both hands on and you need to compress 2 to 5 centimeters deep at a rate of 100 to 120 per minute. Okay? You need to do that at 100 to 120 per minute because that is a sufficient rate in order for you to pump. You're basically pumping the heart.
Yes, manually, it's like manually doing this to the heart.
Manually doing that to the heart, right? And, I mean, if you're in the field and you don't have any other equipment, that's all you really need to know.
Mm.
The things with a bag mask and giving breaths and all of that and a defibrillator, all that definitely will help. But the number one thing that saves lives is CPR, good quality chest compressions. And then secondly, all the evidence points towards getting a defibrillator. Mm. You know, clear that thing. But in this case, the guy is alert.
Yeah. So everything about that thing is wrong. But, to defend them, this is the Indian Administrative Service. So these are admin people in some government facility who only have... Well, apparently they all... it's compulsory to get basic life support there as a staff member. So they did get training.
Yes.
But, sure. I mean, at the same time, you have to understand these aren't health-inclined people. And, but, I mean, they missed the first rule, like you mentioned. I mean, are they breathing? Is there a pulse? That's the only cue where you can start pushing someone's chest, even if they're standing, you understand? But they wouldn't be standing if they didn't have a pulse.
All the things I think, I mean, like we laugh at it, but, you know, I think it's actually something you need to like inform on, like proper practice and proper CPR. Because, I mean, it's like a bare minimum. You can...
Yeah, you could literally save someone's life or at least until a paramedic or someone gets there.
Mm.
At least that at the bare minimum. Those principles that I've mentioned, you should know. For anyone working anywhere in any office, that's at least the bare minimum.
I remember there was one. Yeah.
No, but please, what I'm saying is like, if someone is alert and still able to communicate with you, if he had a pulmonary embolus, so that's a clot that's migrated towards the blood supply of the lungs, there is some studies that show that with CPR, you can actually break that clot because those clots are quite large. Whereas the small clots that cause a heart attack, those are the blood vessels that supply the heart. And if you pump on the chest, it's unlikely that those small ones are going to dislodge. But a big one with enough chest compressions, there is some studies that have shown that it can help. Mm. But in this case,
definitely, no.
Yeah, there was some real, I think of a South African one where one of the nurses were bag masking the patient, but the mask was actually like well above the patient's face, and it was just like...
So they were just holding the mask above it while the person's unconscious.
I can't remember the actual thing about it, but yeah.
It was a movie, no?
Yeah, so I mean, look, we need to teach everyone in every space, office, office block, and... every work environment possible, how to do basic life support because it's necessary for survival. You never know when somebody could have a stroke, heart attack, something that would render them their heart in cardiac arrest. And the only way to give them a chance of survival is to basically take over the function of their heart and doing it effectively. And that could even mean breaking ribs.
Yeah, yeah.
To do effective CPR, you may break some ribs because that's how deep you actually need to press. And if you're lying on a flat surface, it's very uncomfortable for someone if they are alert and they can still feel.
Yeah.
Like I think the only reason why they went on chair.
The only reason why they went on for so long with that one is because of the chair.
Yeah.
So most of the pressure wasn't even, it was just pushing the chair. I wanted to say, if I was health minister, I would make it compulsory for parents. So if once you've impregnated, both you and your person need to get CPR.
100%.
I mean, how many kids do you see who've drowned coming
BLS
in as a
training,
death on arrival to a casualty? Yeah. And I mean, I'm telling you, with CPR, that child probably would have
A lot of those kids that demise, it's not really CPR wouldn't have helped. It's like usually like asphyxia, right? So SIDS. So the moms who are like keeping their kids in their arms, they fall asleep, wake up, babies passed away in their arms because
like
of
aspiration,
the way that aspiration. So the way that they're holding. So young kids, I think below a few years, a few months, they can't maintain their own airway. So that if any position you put them in, they can choke like right there.
Yeah.
So I mean, you could benefit, but a lot of it is mainly education. You can't leave your kids
alone in the building. They can fall off the building. You can't leave. If their kids are, this is some kind of signs where kids have like, what are signs of dehydration? Those danger signs we should be educating people on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, fair, but I still think it's a simple skill and it could save so many people, you know, not just the kid that you're training. But I think using that as an opportunity to say, you're going to learn to save, you know, if your kid were to collapse.
Like teaching a woman at the clinic.
No, it's definitely.
Pregnant woman at the clinic, BLS. Why not?
Yeah. Do you guys want to hear some esoteric CPR techniques?
Yes, let's hear them before
These
leave.
Are hidden secrets, like cough CPR or like percussion CPR.
Okay.
So no.
Okay, let's tell her. Now you've already opened the can. Finish off your thoughts so we can go.
Oh, so like apparently it works that, I'm not saying it does, but it's like esoteric stuff. But like a person who is awake and having a heart attack or something, they can feel themselves arresting. Then they can cough to a CPR for themselves.
Oh really? Yeah. Just keep coughing.
And even like the like percussion, like you can percuss, like you can or like even like a precordial thump, right? You can do that on someone like pacing. So instead of having a normal pacer where you connect someone to a defibrillator and maintain the person's heart, because these guys can like you sedate them normally, but like if they're awake, you can just keep thumping on their chest and it can anyway, these
regulate
are all
their heart rate.
Yeah,
this is all dodgy
dodge medicine. Really,
this dodge medicine. There's no real but interesting stuff. We've been through a lot of videos. Some proper medicine, proper science. Some not so proper, not so much science. But we've debunked a lot of myths and affirmed some of the claims that were made. Thank you for joining us for another episode. As always, if you want to consult with us, visit us at www.jensclinic.co.za for all your men's health needs. We have medication that could help you regardless of your issue. Thank you for joining us once again. My name is Dr. Sohail Essa, signing off.
Dr. Bilagazi, signing off.
Dr. Vijay Naidu, signing out.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
We'll see you next week.